Welcome to the Ithaca Radio Hour, a weekly program of news, views, culture, and events in our area. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Today is Monday, June 23rd, 2003. On tonight's show, you'll hear a report on the state of affordable housing in Tompkins County. Marty Luster shares his opinion of the Destiny USA project. Asma Barlas discusses the difficulties Muslims face in the United States. Also, a poem by Michelle Courtney Berry. Last week, we covered the Alternatives Federal Credit Union's Living Wage press conference. Their most recent study has concluded that the living wage in Tompkins County is just over $18,000. For people with low incomes, housing assistance is often a necessity. This week, we bring you exclusive coverage of the county's initiative to address the housing needs of the working poor.
Last Thursday, the Tompkins County Health and Human Services Committee heard from a dozen agencies that work with county residents in need of affordable housing. Martha Robertson, chair of the committee, asked each agency to identify the most pressing needs of their clients and to offer practical recommendations.
We thought it might be important to bring together an interdisciplinary group to talk about what's the current situation in the county for the homeless, for people who are at risk of losing their housing, people who have housing but it's really substandard, inadequate, or they worry about losing it. Obviously, we're in a terrible financial situation, but it really may well be that we are putting expensive Band-Aids on a situation, spending more money than a real solution might actually cost.
The first speaker was Paul Mazzarella of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services.
I understand you're going to cover a wide range of housing issues, and I'm going to confine my remarks to housing as it relates to affordable home ownership, particularly for a population that can best be described as the working poor. That's the group that INHS mostly works with and the one that we're most familiar with. Here in Tompkins County, we often talk about how our county is unique, special, or otherwise different than other places, and some things are actually true about that. And one of the things that is true about our county is that the cost of housing here is significantly higher than the surrounding region. And that's true for both renters and people who strive to be homeowners. And just to put this in perspective for you, in the year 2000, the median purchase price of a home in Tompkins County was about $119,000, almost $120,000. And that was 40% higher than the next highest median purchase price, which was in Tioga County. And then it goes down from there. If you look at the other surrounding counties, housing gets progressively cheaper. I was looking in the Real Estate Journal that comes out in the Ithaca Journal, and there was an ad for housing in Elmira. There's a whole bunch of houses you can buy down there in the $35,000, $36,000, $37,000 range, and they're not just single families. They're two- and three-unit housing. Here, it would be unheard of to buy a house at that price. One of the issues with the high cost of housing is that that cost has really accelerated in the last 18 months. From 2001 to 2003, the median cost of buying a home increased about 21% in Tompkins County, and that was to the beginning of this year. In the last 4 or 5 months, I think we've seen a real bidding war over available homes. The affordability gap is growing extremely serious for would-be homeowners, and what we're finding is that as housing costs are rising, people at the lower ends of income are finding it less and less possible for them to buy homes. And there are a number of programs around that help people buy homes. INHS operates one. Better Housing for Tompkins County operates the other. Those are highly successful programs, but we're not nearly meeting the demand that exists. And we're finding, at least at INHS, that in order to effectively help lower-income people, it requires more and more subsidy to get them into the higher cost housing. So that's a problem for us because it spreads the available resources out even more than what we have experienced in the past.
Next, we hear from Chuck Nocera of the Red Cross, which operates both the homeless shelter and the Friendship Center, a drop-in site for people at loose ends.
I also wanted to pick up on the theme that Paul had started with by describing Tompkins County, because I think there's a prevailing belief, a thin veil, that this is a county of prosperity. And it really is a county of economic contrasts. in this work done by Ed's department, Heather McDaniels had put this data together looking at affordability indicators. I'm going to draw out a few to compare Tompkins to the contiguous counties. We have the tightest housing market with a 4.6 vacancy rate countywide, 2.7 within the city. The least affordable rental units, because it's the highest median monthly gross rent at $611. The lowest unemployment rate of 3.7, but it's a sector, labor sector, dominated by a market that generates low wages. We have the fewest rental units with rents under $300 a month. The highest number of households earning less than $10,000 a year. The highest proportion of renters that are cost burdened. 49% of the renters in countywide are cost burdened, and 57 within the city pay more than 30% of their income towards rent. We also have the highest poverty rates, 39% of the people in the county and 55% in the city. So those are very stark figures. When we look at the reasons for homelessness within for the folks using our shelter, overwhelmingly the answer is lack of affordable housing. We need to create more housing at all levels of the continuum. We need more shelter, we need transitional units, and we need permanent supported units. We need to increase the stock of very low-income housing in this community. But they can't be cost burdensome for this population. We're talking about population that makes $10,000 or less. We're talking about someone on TANF, safety net, SSD, or working at minimum wage. And part of the building of an infrastructure is look at ways to support the effort of a livable wage.
Tom Garcia of Tompkins Community Action administers vouchers for the Housing and Urban Development Section 8 program.
Tompkins Community Action controls 802 vouchers in this county. We currently bring about $4 million worth of rental assistance in to the county, for rental assistance to the landlords who are assisting our participants. We've got about 27 families out that are looking, that have open vouchers. They're having a little trouble finding units. We currently have 470 people on our waiting list who are seeking rental assistance. Out of the 470, 128 of these families have marked homelessness problems. Homelessness in our issues could be substandard housing issues. It could be they've had utility shutoffs and they currently are in a problem. They can't cook. I mean, there's a variety of categories that fall into that. We don't have the vouchers to house those 128 families at this time. And if we did, whether we could find the units could be a question also.
Ed Marks is Planning Commissioner of Tompkins County.
Federal support for lower income housing over the last 20 years has really declined markedly. All the programs are underfunded. The voucher programs, the rental assistance programs, it's typical across New York State that there's a waiting list of 50% of the capacity of the program of people that aren't being served that would otherwise be eligible. It's difficult to see right at the moment how we will get the new housing units we seem to need to address the affordability issue. Most of the contractors these days want to build high-end because that's where the profit is. There isn't a lot of profit in median-income housing. When it comes to affordable housing that is subsidized, there's a lot of community resistance to these projects, unfortunately, and so they're very difficult to get off the ground. And also, one of the things that is interesting to me is where there is new housing being constructed, no one is talking about, are any of these units affordable? In many places in the country, there's an affordability requirement built into new housing construction in places where the market is tight. And actually, that is, I think, a preferred way to do it where you can. So that's an issue we may want to think about for the future.
Stacy Crawford works with Better Housing for Tompkins County.
As far as opportunities and realistic steps to take, as far as affordable rentals go, what I would add to what others are saying is the possibility of helping with education of our community members. What we've been finding in trying to develop housing using tax credit with some developers and things is that a lot of people, when they hear affordable housing, think it's going to be terrible, it's going to be outsiders, and why are you bringing these people to live in our community? There needs to be help in educating people that the need is real and it's pressing and it involves each of them in communities. It's one another. It's not just outsiders. Also maybe considering promoting zoning that recognizes the need. Right now the process is kind of backwards. When you apply for tax credit funding, developers have to find sites, convince planning boards and communities that it should be used this way, sometimes changing things, zoning, that kind of thing. Meanwhile, community leaders and others who live there are left wondering if it's a legitimate enterprise, why there's developers that are coming here that are based outside of the area, and that tends to scare people too, even if they work with local not-for-profits like us and like INHS and others that are going to make sure it's a good thing. It would be nice if there were enough areas that were already designated as suitable or zoned appropriately, combined with a recognized acceptance in a community. If that was the case in more places, I think that that could help.
Again, Ed Marks.
I'd just like to close with a couple thoughts on location and how we look at this issue. Some folks have said it's good to scatter the housing around the county, and I would agree with that. Certainly in the villages and hamlets, those would be great places for new housing. But what we, I think, are seeing is people with limited means are being forced into more remote areas. And then you have to add to their costs, not only is their cost of housing above the percentage that would normally be considered affordable, but then they need to maintain the ability to commute if they're going to be employed. And then the second thing is, again, we've talked about a lot of specialized housing needs, and I think we need to try to find a ways to integrate into the community the housing needs for the various segments of the community, not isolate them, not think of housing for this group or that group as a project you put someplace and then you deal with all of the locational issues and community resistance you get to that, but we should be thinking of a strategy that says when you build new housing, you include housing to meet the needs of all of the population.
Martha Robertson hopes to develop a set of recommendations that can help agencies and the county tackle this urgent need in our community.
Thanks to Jesse Lynn for that report. Tompkins County Area Transportation, or TCAT, is raising bus fares effective August 21st. In addition, TCAT is proposing a cut in bus routes as early as July. You can send comments to TCAT's Dwight Mengel at dem11@tcatmail.com. You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour. Upon completion of Destiny USA, Syracuse will be home to America's largest mall. Former New York State Assemblyman Marty Luster questions the financial underpinnings of the project.
Back in 2001, Robert J. Congell, major owner of the Pyramid Mall mega empire, announced the initial plans for the creation of Destiny USA, a gargantuan shopping mall, resort, and tourist destination, a sort of Mall of America meets Disney World right here in good old central New York. Since that time, the exact nature of the project has changed, the estimate of new jobs that will result has seesawed, precise plans for the use of the 3.2 million square feet of space has had several incarnations, and the opening date has gone from 2004 to 2006. Also changing over the past several years has been the level of taxpayer support demanded by the developers as their price for going forward. Originally, the plan called for legislation that would divert state sales tax paid at the new mall to a new upstate New York Tourism Council. The council would have a majority of its members appointed by the governor, who would then use this tax money to maintain its offices at the mall and hand out grants and contracts to individuals and companies involved in tourism enhancement. The legislation was passed and signed by the governor. Since that time, the developers have convinced the Syracuse Industrial Development Agency to issue tax-exempt bonds for the project, thereby decreasing the developers' borrowing costs, obtained Empire Zone tax-free coverage, not only for the proposed project, but for the existing Carousel Center Mall, also a pyramid project, as well as other local and state initiatives. But the hunt for your tax dollars to support this so-called private development is far from over. In the face of reported difficulties by Destiny to attract and identify major retail tenants as well as investors to underwrite the $2.2 billion scheme, Mr. Conjul and his fellow free marketeers have begun an intensive lobbying campaign to convince state lawmakers and the governor, who apparently needs little convincing, that we, the taxpayers of New York, should provide more of the financial backing for a project whose financial viability and actual regional and statewide benefits are being questioned. What the developers are now asking for is a state guarantee of about $1.5 billion worth of bonds that the company would float to finance construction. The pledged state funds would be the real property tax rebates the company would be entitled to under the Empire Zone designation. But instead of getting the benefits spread out over 14 years, the developers get the full value up front, with the state left holding the bag should the project go belly up any time during that 14-year period. As James C. McKinley, Jr. has written in the New York Times, quote, "If such a plan were enacted, as Mr. Conjul wants, it would be the first time state funds meant to reimburse struggling businesses for property taxes were used as collateral for bonds, a financing plan some critics say amounts to a special gift for Mr. Conjul," end quote. Why such special treatment? Just take a look at who's lobbying on behalf of the Conjul interests. Alphonse D'Amato, John O'Mara, Governor Pataki's former Public Service Commission chief and major political operative, Kieran Mahoney, whose brother, according to the Times, is the chief underwriter at Lehman Brothers, who will be selling the IDA bonds, and Pat Lynch, former top aide to Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. This is a high-powered crew. Locally, only Senator John DeFrancisco has voiced opposition to the plan. As I said in a letter to the Syracuse Post-Standard 2 years ago, this whole project will result in being either or both the biggest mall in America or one of its greatest boondoggles. This is Marty Luster.
This is the Ithaca Radio Hour. Asma Balas is chair of the Department of Politics at Ithaca College. A native of Pakistan and the first woman to join the Foreign Service in that country, she was fired by General Zia, Pakistan's former military ruler, for criticizing him. In 1983, she moved to the U.S. and eventually was granted political asylum. She recently received a Woman of Distinction Award from State Senator Randy Cool. This spring, Professor Balas spoke at the Homeland Insecurity Forum at Cornell University. She discussed the difficulties Muslims face in the United States.
The assault on civil liberties in the wake of 9/11 has been stunning as much for its speed as for its content and its ever-widening scope. Most of these measures target Muslim and Arab men. For instance, all men over 16 from several Muslim countries, including Pakistan, are now required to be fingerprinted, photographed, and interviewed by the INS. And since the start of the program, 3,000 Pakistanis have fled to Canada, 1,100 have been deported, as many as 50,000 are expected to return to Pakistan on their own before all this is over. First, while racial profiling is nothing new, it still begs the question of why it has been so easy to typecast Muslims and Arabs as terrorists, notwithstanding 9/11. I say notwithstanding because a tragedy of whatever proportions does not determine how one responds to it. Nor are entire people always held culpable for the crimes of a few. Certainly, white people can claim uniquely individualized identities as a way of freeing themselves from the burdens of collective responsibility. Thus, Hitler remains Hitler and Timothy McVeigh, Timothy McVeigh. Neither becomes essentialized as the essence of white folks. But Muslims and Arabs and people of color cannot claim such individuality because they are always branded with the mark of the plural, as Memi calls it. As he says, quote, "The colonized is never characterized in an individual manner. He is entitled only to drown in an anonymous collectivity. They are this, they are all the same." It's no secret that most U.S. Americans aren't interested in what their governments do abroad, even though methods of repression and control that governments use abroad are eventually imported for the purpose of domesticating critics and minorities at home. My own view is that it is largely a belief in their own particularism that keeps most U.S. Americans from realizing what it means to be part of a larger world. In the U.S., as the song goes, we are the world. And when the world does intrude upon people's consciousnesses, it generally is in the form of wars, natural disasters, and tales of horrific destitution. Between the violence and the charity that such representations inspire, there is little room for cultivating relationships with others based in mutual recognition or understanding. In fact, the very scale of U.S. power has convinced its citizens that they don't need to know others, since that they can go it alone in everything. But one cannot live knowledgeably, ethically, or safely with people if one does not understand them or know in what ways one may be connected to or beholden to them. Ironically, then, U.S. power renders Americans vulnerable to the world by estranging them from it. This alienation results also from a Manichaean view of the universe in which a morally unique and uniquely moral U.S. is juxtaposed to an evil and dangerous world mired in fanaticism, hatreds, and jealousies. To embrace such a view, however, is to do away with any notion of humility and even with a sound view of morality, since it is not given to a person, let alone to an entire people, to be only good. It is this view of themselves and others, this peculiar mode of self and other recognition, that I believe explains the U.S.-American response to 9/11 and Muslims, and therefore also the precarious situation of Muslims and Arabs in the U.S. today.
You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour. Cornell University and Binghamton University alum Michelle Courtney Berry is a nationally regarded slam poet, author, activist, and speaker. She ranked 16th in the nation at the 2001 National Poetry Slam Festival in Seattle and has been active in the peace movement. This piece was recorded last Saturday at Out in the Finger Lakes, the first annual gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender parade and speak out on the Ithaca Commons.
Giving birth to myself, so I want to do things simple like eat rice and enjoy it. So this is an Oros love poem. I am the one born of African blood, torn from my homeland and then brought shackled to these shores, and my blood also rings clear with Irish immigrant the poor. I will not be labeled and boxed up just because other people think that's more convenient. I will name myself African, Irish, Cherokee, the blood of me allied and not straight identified, but allied, and I say this. I do not want to be silenced anymore, and I don't want McDonald's to give me another thing that they call a fry, which has never been a potato, but just the smell of potatoes. Don't you think we can have a real potato, people? I don't want this government to do anything else in our name like rape, kill, and maim, though they've always done it. I want to stand up and say to all of you again, and I said this at the last rally I was at, if anyone calls you and says if you support the Bush administration, don't be afraid of the creepy McCarthyism that's creeping through our lives. Just fart in your telephone. So as you can see, this is a very uppity black woman poem. But it ain't just for black women, it's for everybody, because everybody got the spirit in hip-hop now, because just like they done commoditized what the word is to make it all real, that they all love gay, lesbian, transgender people just so it can sell beer. Well, I want to say this, they done sold out black people, now everybody black on TV too. So we're all in this thing together, people. Don't you hear the roar of the drum in your ear? Oh, I will not be crucified. Nobody will tell me how to identify it. Oh, man, look, we we arrived. Wouldn't it have been nice for my father, who swam naked with another man, to be here today and be held instead of being told that he was wrong, so wrong that he drank until I could not understand him? Wouldn't it be nice if we were alive today and see that his love were possible? And what about that man who showed up on our front stoop and threatened to out my father, and my father withdrew, and my mother stood on the porch as if nothing happened? What would it be for my mother, whose lesbian erotica was so lovely, those pages so torn and tattered from being so well read? What would it be like today if she could be here? Well, let's not think about that, because if she heard me say that, she would kill me. But I thought my parents were both gay and I had a home and a place. I didn't know that their silence would be so loud. But I understand the voice of silence because, as Audre Lorde said, we have to speak out even when they try to make us silent. What'd she say? If I was going to die, if not sooner than later, whether or not I had ever spoken myself, my silences had not protected me. Your silence will not protect you.
That was Michelle Courtney Berry, recorded last Saturday by the Luminary News. Tonight, come meet the people who produce material for the Ithaca Radio Hour. Find out what we do and how we do it. We have pocket-sized recording kits, editing software, and the lessons learned from pulling together a show each week. Do you have an interest in working on the project? Anyone can do it. Most of us had never done this kind of thing in our lives. So hop on your bike and head on down to the old jail at 125 East Court Street here in Ithaca. The meeting is at 7:30, so you have half an hour. See you there. The Student Reuse Project invites everyone to come on Wednesday to the sale site from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and take it for free. Everything must go by the end of the day Wednesday. The SRP sale is located just off Route 89 on Old Teganic Boulevard, across the street from Castaway's Bar on Inlet Island. This Wednesday, musicians Bill and Maggie Anderson will be performing at Montgomery Park in Dryden as part of the Town of Dryden Recreation Department's Continuing Music in the Park concert series. The Andersons perform bluegrass, gospel, and Carter-style old-time country. Bring along a lawn chair or a blanket. That's this Wednesday at 7 p.m. All Music in the Park concerts are free and open to the public. A regional Green Party meeting will be held next Saturday in Freeville, near Ithaca. The public is invited to join Greens from throughout Western New York at Earthwalk Farm for a day of discussion and debate on a wide range of green issues. A $5 contribution is requested to cover costs. For a complete schedule, information on reserving a camping space, and directions to Earthwalk Farm, read the article at tcgreens.org or contact Victoria Jordan at victoriaj@clarityconnect.com or 539-6986. Next Monday, a workshop entitled What's in Your Backyard? Archaeology of Eastern Cayuga Lake will be held at the Share Farm in Union Springs. Jack Rawson will be giving a talk and identifying artifacts you bring. Registration is $5. For more information, visit share.clarityconnect.com or call 315-889-7371. Again, that's next Monday from 7 to 8:30 p.m. This week's show is produced by Jesse Lind, Jeff Kirby, Laura Ratzloff, and Linda Orkin. Special thanks to the Luminary News. Our theme music is an instrumental version of Circus by Crow Greenspun. During the show, we played music from Faulty Perception Machine, Plastic Nebraska, and Paso Fino. For online information about the music we played and contact info for the calendar events we've announced, go to our webpage at ithacaradio.org/radiohour. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week.
The Ithaca Radio Hour is a project of Ithaca Community Radio and is produced at Rep Studio. For more information about ICR, visit our website at ithacaradio.org. You're listening to WEOS 89.7 Geneva, broadcast in Ithaca by ICR on 88.1, or WHRW 90.5 Binghamton.